The lectionary texts for this week fit together in a wonderful sort of narrative that makes for a really, really excellent 20, 30-minute sermon. But it's Communion Sunday, and we celebrated two baptisms. So this is part one of a really excellent 20, 30-minute sermon. It begins with my very brief history of at least Judeo-Christian religion, if not all religion, which goes something like this. I think that we as human beings have a couple of very basic experiences that are sort of inherent in us. We experience that there's something wrong. There's something not quite right with us or with the world. There's a brokenness somewhere. Something is missing or something is wrong. And the story from Genesis that talks about a snake and some, you know, Adam and Eve and some trees and some fruit, I think is one story trying to communicate that sense of wrongness and how it came to be. How can we be so very far from who we are called to be? How can we be so broken? And we have a second experience, which is that there's something out there. There's something more. There's something holy. There's something transcendent. There's something greater than us. We call it all sorts of different things in different religious traditions. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, we call it God, but others call it other things. But I think when we put those together, we get this sense that there's something else out there, this holiness. If we could be closer to it, if we could come to know it, then we might be healed of that brokenness and that wrongness in us and the world, and we'd be in a better place. And that, to me, is where faith comes from, individually and as a people. And the story of that faith is that we all kind of start with that experience, or with the experience of God, one way or the other, maybe one of those things more strongly, that sense of brokenness and suffering, or that sense of otherness and transcendence, and putting those together, and then we do some really terrible things to that. We organize it, and we give it structure. We do the worst thing you could ever do to any beautiful spiritual movement. We ordain clergy, and we put people in charge of it, and we structure it, and we try to regulate it, right? And that's kind of the story of the Judeo-Christian faith, you know? So Moses comes down off Mount Sinai with a couple of tablets, and he says, this is it. This is all it's about, how we live before God, before the holy, and how we live with one another, and try not to be quite so broken and wrong all the time. And that's it. And that works for a little while, but then people kind of slip away from that. There's a time of renewal in the Hebrew Bible where it's described that they kind of uncover the scrolls or the books of Moses again, the first five books of the Hebrew Bible. And the people read them and realize, well, we haven't been doing this. And so the king calls for a revival, and the whole nation turns again. You know, it's like, come back, experience God, experience your need for God. Reset back at the important point, and the other stuff doesn't matter quite so much. We build it back up again, and every so often a prophet or a dreamer or a visionary reformer comes along and says, no, it's about the experience of God and our need for God, and healing the brokenness by our knowledge and our connection to God and to the holy. And we get it for a while, and then we slip away. So here comes Jesus, a big, huge reformer, a big, huge visionary, an enormous prophet, and that's the scene he walks into. He walks into a scene where the organized religious body of his time has become so heavy, so top-heavy with priests and structure and temple sacrifices and who's in and who's out. And Jesus says, it's not about that. It's about our need for God and how when we come to know God, if you come to know God in me, that we can be healed of that brokenness, and we can start again. And people get it, and they get really excited, and a whole new movement starts. And right from the get-go in this whole new movement, there is a controversy. And the controversy is, since Jesus was Jewish, and all the people who followed Jesus were Jewish, in order to be a part of this new Jesus movement, do you have to first be Jewish? So if you have to first be Jewish, either you're in trouble if you were born into the wrong, you know, nationality, or if you're a guy, you've got to go through some pretty painful initiation rituals to become Jewish. And that's what the argument's about. Is it exclusive to Jews, to the chosen people? And the structure almost immediately begins to jump behind this question. And the early movement, before it's even a church, before the paint's even dry on the walls of what will one day be churches, the early movement is already dividing into these two camps. And on the one hand, we have the Apostle Paul, who's like, well, even though I'm Jewish, and Jesus was Jewish, I think this message is for everybody, and I want to go spread it to everybody. And you have, amongst others, you have Peter, saying, no, I think we have to be good Jews, because Jesus was a good Jew. And then Peter has a vision, a very important vision. And you know my deep and abiding love for Peter and how thick he can be sometimes. He gets this vision, and I'm very proud of him. He sees this enormous picnic come down from the heavens, but on the picnic blanket are all the things that the Hebrew Bible says are unclean, all the stuff that's against kosher. And a voice from heaven says, Peter, kill and eat. And Peter says, ha-ha, I'm smarter than this. I know a trick when I see one. I know a test when I see one. No, Lord, I have never violated the laws of kosher, and I'm not about to start now. And the voice says, oh, Peter. Okay, no, I'm serious this time. Kill and eat. And when I say that something's okay to eat, it's okay to eat. When I say that something's clean, it's clean. It's not for you to decide that. And Peter, bless his heart, gets it, and he gets that it's a metaphor, which is a big thing for Peter to get that. For any of us to get that. It only takes him 3 times to get that, which is really good. It takes me a lot more than that sometimes. But he gets that it's a metaphor and that it's not about food, that it's about people. And it's about this question of who is clean enough to enter the new Jesus movement and who's accepted and where the Spirit can move. And that he and this camp of people that are saying you must first be Jewish are trying to limit the work of the Spirit. And he realizes that what God is saying to him in this vision is that if I have called someone, it's not up to you to build a wall around that or to put conditions on that. If I have said a person is clean, if I have poured my Spirit upon someone, who are you to question that? And Peter gets it. God says to Peter, God says in the book of Revelation, through the vision, I'm doing this a new way. I'm creating something different here. And the old structures and the old ways, they don't count and they don't work. And so from the get-go, before you go building up these structures and these hierarchies and these walls and boundaries in this new movement, I'm going to nip that in the bud. That's not the way we're going to do it this time. It's not going to be like that. Now, it's been almost 2 millennia since Peter's vision. Since the revelation that's recorded in the last book of the Bible, and we've had lots and lots of time to build more structure. And I think, by and large, that's what denominations are about. Denominations don't argue over whether or not we experience God, or there's a need for God, or whether or not when we come to know God, we might find that we're more healed, we're restoring that brokenness in us and in the world by knowing God and by being closer to God. We don't argue about that. We argue about who can be clergy. We argue about who can be a member. We argue about, you know, which door you enter into and which hymns are better and what it means particularly to particular pieces of bread and wine or grape juice, whether we use wine or grape juice. We argue about a whole bunch of things, but we don't argue about our need for God. We argue about the structures and the boundaries and the things we put around it. And so we get all these different denominations, and every once in a while a reformer will stand up and say, oh, I think we missed it. And Martin Luther says, here are my 95 ways I think we missed it. And John Wesley says, well, you know, Church of England, you're doing a good job, but here are the ways I think that we've missed it. It needs to be more about service. And these new movements spring up, and again, they get structured and hierarchied up and built back up. And every now and then we have to ask ourselves, how have we been trying to hinder God? How have we been trying to contain who the Spirit can and cannot touch? Who we can and cannot accept as part of the family of God? And we have to ask that question generally and particularly. We have to ask where the Christian church has hindered instead of helped, has hindered people from coming to God. We have to ask where our denomination, the Methodist Church, has hindered people from coming to God. Well, that stings a little bit more. We have to ask where we as a local church, where we may have hindered people from coming to God, where we may have built barriers. That one really hurts. And most painfully of all, We have to ask where we as individuals may have hindered people from coming to know God, may have judged or condemned as outside those whom God has called, may have labeled unclean, or have ignored or have shut ourselves off from those whom God has called. That one really hurts. And they're not hypothetical questions, because many of us, I know I can put names and faces to people that the Christian church or the Methodist church or local churches I've been a part of, or tragically, I myself, may have stood between that person and God, may have hindered rather than helped, may have built a wall rather than torn it down. And we need to hear the message that God gives to Peter and says, it's not going to be this way. I'm doing something different. I'm doing something new. There's a new way. There's a new structure, or lack thereof. There is, in the gospel passage we didn't read this morning, a new commandment. And when we let go of the structures and the hierarchies and the boundaries and the walls that we make, not that God makes, but that we make, what is left in its place? What's left in its place is something new that God gives us, a new way, a new commandment. When we stop hindering ourselves and hindering one another from coming to God, what is left is something new. And what is this new thing? You'll have to tune in next week to find out. Amen.